Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you a little of this, a little of that. Just looking out the window from where I'm sitting, I thought, you know, this would be a good day to talk about steps for safer winter driving. So over the next few minutes, I'm going to give you a few tips on how to keep your car in top shape for tackling snow and ice. I'll list them first and then go back and talk about them in a little more detail. And first of all, I would say, stay gassed up. Don't let that tank go low. Next, check your battery. Then top off the washer fluid. And you want to stock up for emergencies. You don't want to leave the house and go far away from it without the appropriate gear. We'll be back, come back to that in just a few minutes. You want to drive slowly and smoothly. No herky-jerky, no sudden stops, no zoom away from the light. And then you want to clear away the snow and ice. And those of you, those one or two of you who may not carry their mobile phone with them at all times, including going to bed, remember to take a fully charged phone. And then you want to dress appropriately for driving. Don't run out, jump in the car with just a t-shirt on and shorts, because that may be the last trip you take as they try to unfreeze you at a later time. Well, let's look at these in more detail. Clearing away the snow and ice. You want to scrape off windshield ice. It's an absolute must that you do this. Also, remove the ice and snow from the headlights, the turn signal lights, and any sensors that you have on the car for added safety features, such as forward collision warning or a rear view camera. People might not think of that as a run out in the morning to get in the car on a cold, snowy day. Secondly, I said you want to drive slowly and smoothly. Have to be on the road in bad weather? Well, imagine if you have that you have a full cup of coffee on your dashboard. You want to drive as if you don't want to spill it. Let safety features do their job. For instance, there's no need to pump anti-lock brakes. Just step on them. They're made to help bring a vehicle to a fast stop while still allowing the driver to steer. And a professional tip, the pros tell us, if your car's rear begins to slide, gently let up on the accelerator and turn the steering wheel in the direction that the car is sliding. Then, you remember I said take a fully charged phone. Before you go out, make sure you have a charged cell phone with you and a charging cord in the car. Be sure you have the number of a towing service or your automobile club in case you get stuck somewhere, because you want to be able to contact immediate assistance. And then I suggested that you stay gassed up. Keep the tank at least half full. And if you get stuck in the snow or a traffic jam, you'll be thankful to have plenty of gas to keep your car and its heater running. But be sure that snow doesn't block your tailpipe, which can allow hazardous emissions to build up. And I mentioned checking your battery. Well, cold and hot weather can affect battery performance. Have your battery tested annually if it's more than 4 years old. And if you live in a cold area, do that. But if you live in a warmer area, check it every 2 years. Replace if testing shows its ability to hold its voltage is compromised. Remember, a good battery is well worth it. When I say a good battery, I mean sometimes a more expensive battery is really a lifesaver. And so you want to top off the washer fluid too. The wipers and the washer fluid help to keep your windshield clear when snow and ice and slush accumulate. Remember, I said that you should top off the washer fluid. Wipers and washer fluid help to keep your windshield clear when snow and ice or slush accumulates. But be sure you use winter-grade formula that won't freeze. Don't just put in water. Obviously, it's going to freeze. And so then, finally, as a very serious suggestion to you, stock up for emergencies. Items to keep in the car on an ongoing basis, especially if you're going far from home, should include a first aid kit, a flashlight, extra batteries, either some road flares or some triangle reflectors. Put some work gloves in there, a rain poncho, a blanket, and a couple of ice scrapers along with a shovel. Sometimes you should have a bag of sand or cat litter, a tow strap. I know this sounds like quite a bit, but if you're going to be traveling away from your home for any distance and for any time, it might very well help you in an emergency. So those are my safe driving tips for the year, and I'll be back very shortly. Our second item today is entitled From Grunge to Glam. What I'm talking about is snowboarding. Rebellious youth, Olympic glory, how a goofy American pastime conquered winter. Long before the term snowboarding existed, and at least 80 years before it was an Olympic phenomenon, people were zipping like surfers down snow-covered hills. The first known instance occurred in 1917, when 13-year-old Vern Wicklund stood on a modified sled that he rode down his parents' backyard in Cloquet, Minnesota. Wicklund patented the idea nearly two decades later, but produced only a handful of models. The sport picked up speed, though, in 1965, when Michigan's Sherman Poppin created the snurfer by cross-bracing two skis and adding a string at the front for steering. Poppin sold close to 1 million units by 1970. But the real breakthrough happened when Dmitry Milovich, a Cornell University dropout, founded the company Winterstick, the first modern snowboard company. And this was in 1972. With its steel edges, laminated fiberglass, and most crucially, nylon straps for one's feet, Winterstick's boards allowed riders to fly through more treacherous topography than its predecessors had. Snowboarding went mainstream soon thereafter, amid a fierce rivalry between Jake Burton Carpenter and Tom Sims. Sims, a New Jersey raised professional skateboarder, was more interested in aerial stunts than in speed. And he founded SIMS Snowboarding in 1976. Carpenter, a race enthusiast from Long Island, was credited with coining snowboarding and created Burton Boards 1 year later. Well, as snowboarding grew in popularity, so did its reputation as a pastime for screwballs, a counterculture in skiing's establishment. In the 1980s, most American ski resorts banned snowboarding, citing insurance liability and the rudeness of too many riders. The sport was more accepted in Europe, particularly in France. Quite a lot of snowboarders were uncooperative, according to one ski patrol worker, as he lamented his working conditions to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in 1985. They're smart alecks. They're endangering the public and possibly themselves. But by the 1990s, almost every resort in North America allowed riding. The event of the Pipe Dragon, a machine to cut half pipes through snow, enabled new aerial stunts. And when snowboarding debuted at the 1998 Olympics, the half pipe was the sport's biggest draw. A skiing half pipe appeared 16 years later. Evidence of the upstart's influence on the grand old sport. It's time now to ask the Smithsonian Institution. Remember, people write letters to the experts at the Smithsonian about questions that they've been thinking about and haven't found a good answer for. Well, the first question today asks, do cat's eyes require time to adjust to the darkness like humans' eyes do? And the Smithsonian answers, cat's pupils do take time to dilate and constrict as they adjust to the light. The difference is that once cat's eyes adjust, their large corneas and their slit pupils use light so efficiently that they have virtual night vision goggles that they wear in the dark. Another question for the Smithsonian was this. What was graffiti like before spray paint was invented? And the Smithsonian responded, graffiti most certainly predates the spray paint can. The term comes from the Italian word for scratched. The ancient Romans, Greeks, and Egyptians used to etch writing and pictures onto walls or rocks using sharp objects. Sometimes the markings were applied to the surface using chalk or coal. Graffiti served as a form of expression, often consisting of terms of endearment or quotations. These messages offer valuable insights about culture and identity, both before and after the invention of spray paint. And finally, our third question for the day, and this is a deep one. What stages does a physical object go through as it gets sucked into a black hole? You know, out in space? Well, it depends which type of black hole an asteroid or a star encounters. Stellar mass black holes are enormously dense. They have masses up to about 100 times the mass of the sun, but are no more than several hundred miles across. As an object approaches one of these black holes, the difference in gravitational force acting on its near side and its far side increases dramatically. Eventually, it is literally ripped apart, its material subsumed into an orbiting accretion flow that either falls into the black hole or it gets shot out as a relativistic jet stream. On the other hand, supermassive black holes residing in the center of galaxies can be larger than our entire solar system, but they're relatively low in density. The largest black holes are even less dense than the air we breathe. An object is able to approach undisturbed until it passes what is called the event horizon. That is the legendary point of no return that defines the edge of the black hole. No one knows exactly what happens after that. And that you can think about for a while. Did you ever wonder where our space ends? Or is there an end? Want some food for thought? Well, here's something that you can chew on for a little while. A home base for the proudly unemployed. A Reddit anti-work forum is keeping up the momentum for the Great Resignation, according to Taylor Nicole Rogers in the Financial Times. Roughly 4.5 million Americans quit their jobs in November, surpassing a record set only 2 months earlier. Some of those quitting are not eager to take a new job. Reddit's anti-work forum has been around since 2013. But its membership has ballooned from 180,000 in October 2020 to 1.6 million past month. Idlers, as members of the anti-work movement call themselves, largely believe that people should strive to work as little as possible and preferably for themselves they should work. Photos of resignation letters have become so popular that moderators restricted their publication to Sundays. However, it's not clear how many idlers are practicing what they preach. A survey of 1,600 anti-work members has found that half of them say they still have full-time jobs. I wonder about that. Here are the words of the year. They evoke the preoccupations of 2021. The words of the year reflect the ethos, the mood, or preoccupations of the past year, according to Oxford Languages. For many people, 2021 looked a lot like 2020, and several dictionaries chose words that related to the pandemic. Oxford Languages picked VAX, V-A-X, which has been in sporadic use since Edward Jenner developed the smallpox vaccine in the late 18th century. Last year, the word spawned numerous derivatives, double vaxxed, vax card, and so on. Vax is unusual because it's often written with double X's when it's inflected. Oxford lexicographers point out that a single is more common, like foxes, waxing, text, except in words relating to digital communications, such as anti-vaxxer and doxing, that is, publishing someone's private details online as a form of revenge. Cambridge Dictionary tackled the pandemic from a different angle, choosing perseverance. Its lexicographers thought the word an appropriate commemoration for a year in which we had to preserve through the challenges and disruption in our own lives from COVID-19 and climate disasters, political instability, and conflict, but we persevered. The lexicons of social justice and cryptocurrency also contributed words of the year. And now it's time to think about the future. We'd like you to tune in to future programs because in the near future, we're going to be talking about, of all things, potato chips, the history of the potato chip. Remember, when COVID-19 forced people to stay home, many of us found solace in a snack, potato chips. The crispy treats enjoyed around a $350 million increase in sales over the year from 2019 to 2020. When the chips are down, it seems Americans gobble them up. Well, you'll want to tune in, hear about the history of potato chips. And also, as we see in future programs, there is going to be a story about the bug that saved California. California, the Golden State citrus industry, faced a lethal threat, and the answer would herald a new kind of pest control and it involves the ladybug. But more about those a little later on. So please come back, be with us. In the meantime, you be safe out there. Take care. Be kind to each other. You'll be surprised how people may react. Remember, we're all in this together, but we're going to get through it. So let's be kind to each other. You take care. Drive safely. And that brings up another comment about Willie Nelson, my good friend, who usually leads us out of the program with his song, On the Road Again. And Willie and I are going to go on the road again, looking for things that are appropriate for the program to entertain you, to inform you, and hopefully from time to time, amuse you. So it's time for us to say goodbye. See you next time. Willie, take us home.